Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
Sci-Fi Malady.
Got out.
This is Rager 1 reporting in.
Copy that, Rager 1. Are you near the target?
Copy that. On my way to crash site now. A lot of debris here. The bodies just look lifeless, like they were dropped here without purpose.
Can you identify any of the bodies, Rager 1?
Random people so far. Some wearing khaki uniforms, others white armor. Oh, here's a few wearing red shirts and others blue.
Have you identified the source, Rager 1?
Not yet. It appears... Stand by, Command. It looks like... Dear God, is it? It looks like the body of Captain Kirk? Stand by. I found him, sir.
Rager 1, can you identify more of the command crew?
Copy that, Command. I can see... Affirmative. I've identified the bodies of Captain Picard, Commander Skywalker, and Captain Solo as well. All of them look like shells of themselves.
Rager 1, can you identify the source of this virus?
Not yet, I... Stand by, Command. Oh, God. Dear God, no, I see it! I see it! It's a... I see it!
Rager 1, come in. Rager 1, come back. Do you see it? Can you identify it?
Worse, it's a bad robot!
Rager 1. Rager 1, you copy?
Sci-Fi Malady, symptom 188, the Andromeda strain, Jurassic virus.
Welcome back, sickies, to the next episode of Malady March, commemorating when we all went in lockdown. In fact, this is the week that we all went into lockdown. Oh, no, wait, last week is the one we went into lockdown. We're just recording it during the week.
Yes, no, Biden finally spoke and told us.
Yes. So, yeah, and they have the flags now. So, anywho, we are covering the 1971 book, our film adaptation of Michael Crichton's book, The Andromeda Strain. And I would have to say that really, if I could have changed the title to this to make it shorter, I would have said The Andromeda Strain, How Scientists Really Would Combat This. Because honestly, it is actually, until they get to the end, when Dr. Hall has to run around and dodge lasers, it is slow and boring. It is really
slow
watching viral scientists do research.
You watch them stare through a microscope for a lot of this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's exactly why we don't make realistic films about combating a virus, because if we did, it would look like this or worse.
Look like the first one we reviewed.
That one at least had something going on.
I mean, that one actually got Hollywood treatment. This one didn't.
Yeah, well, it did get Hollywood treatment, but the problem was it was 1971, where apparently people had way better attention spans, because you're sitting around just the part, and this will show up in Rips and Picks, but just the decontamination part. It's like, wow, did we really need to see every step of this?
I imagine the casting call went, you know, he's like, okay, agent. The agent calls up his client. I've got a role for you. I just got to tell you, you're going to be naked in this role a lot in the first half of the movie.
And just sitting there, by the way, doing very little.
And you're like, whoa, so I got a lot of sex scenes? No, you're just standing there with three other dudes naked.
While a computer, well, probes you more or less.
Get your one-eyed trouser snake sock ready, because you're going to need to wear it for a lot of scenes.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that originally the book had all four of the scientists were male.
Exactly. In fact, you know, since you've mentioned that, I guess I'll jump into the fun facts about the film. And one of them has to do with that casting, that –
that he wanted it. The director wanted it. Yeah.
Yeah. The director wanted a woman, and they were kind of going for Raquel Welch, because if you ever see the film, The Fantastic Voyage, from 1966, where they go inside the human body, Scott, you probably remember we watched that in sixth grade. But that had Raquel Welch because she was the hottest thing ever. And instead they decided to go with Kate Reed after conferring with actual scientists who said, yeah, she looks and sounds like more of a scientist than Raquel Welch does. So
what does that even mean?
I don't know.
What are you trying to say about scientists, female scientists? Don't I'm going to stop talking right now before I get in trouble.
I guess so, but that's
shut your mouth. Shut it before we get canceled, Scott.
That's the way they took it. So he became convinced that that was the positive addition to the story right there.
I'm just going to save it for rips and picks, but I'm going to say I knew watching this, I said to my wife watching this, this film is trying to be progressive. And for 1971, it was very progressive.
Oh, for sure.
For 1971.
Yes, for sure. Crichton, another fun fact, Crichton makes a cameo in this film. It's a non-speaking role, but there's a scene where Dr. Hall is told to break scrub because he has to report to the
background.
Yeah, he's in the background. This is the only time that Michael Crichton appears in one of his movies, by the way. In fact, this story, for that matter, came about while he was in high school. What's that?
It also got picked up really fast.
It did. It really did.
The book and they signed the deal for the movie really fast. Wasn't it like a year later?
Something like that, yeah. And in fact, it's the only he wrote this while in medical school because one of his professors posited something about a crystalline virus or some virus made out of crystal. So he ran with it. And that's why there's a lot of medical references in it, because he just kind of went with it. So,
well, there's another fun fact that the guy who came up with all the medical jargon and stuff in this movie actually looked into the book and tried to check the sources for the book. And apparently he just put bogus sources in the book because it's.
Oh,
so the guy just made up all his sources in the movie, just made them all up.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I mean, it is interesting to me. The special effects of this film, speaking of all that, was it was a lot. It cost $300,000 to build the set, which was the largest, most elaborate set ever built to that point. And the special effects to create the germ from space, I kid you not, cost $250,000. How? I don't know.
You want to know where most of that budget probably went?
Where's that?
Paint.
Yeah, right.
So that makes me understand why the most action-packed scene of the movie occurred off the screen, which was the plane crash.
Yeah. So exactly.
Did you find anything about the director's technique of the split screen where they're looking into the windows?
I did not, but I know Ang Lee ripped it off for his Hulk movie, which the less we speak about that, the better.
Yeah.
I do know that the set, because it was so expensive, was later used in TV shows like The $6 Million Man, Bionic Woman, Knight Rider, and Airwolf, which is funny because, Scott, you sent us that picture saying, we know it's a computer because there's blinking lights.
Yes. yeah. Go back to our sci-fi tropes. Anything before the 80s, you knew it was a computer because the lights blink.
Well, here's the other thing. This was before CGI, so.
Oh, yeah.
The way they got the 3D model of that, of the underground base, had to do with projection filming through construction paper.
Wow. I mean, I'll give them credit for that. The clever ways they had to do these things back then, that took real imagination. I've said it before.
Who would think of filming through construction paper to make and moving it slowly to get transparency and get 3D modeling? Who would think of that?
No one today, because now you would just get a coder to draw up the graphic that you need.
Right.
No, and you just say, make a 3D model of an underground base. Done.
That's exactly what I'm saying, that this is when you go back, I remember in the 90s, the show Movie Magic, and you watched that and it had stuff like this in it. And people that made special effects back then, up until, we'll say, even the early 2000s, they were to be lauded for their creativity, because nowadays it's so easy. I remember Walt Disney, when he filmed Pinocchio, and this is the 30s or 40s, I don't remember which, but that era, he made a series of cameras that would make a 3D look. I mean, how do you sit down and go, animation 3D look, how can we do that? And he comes up with a system. That's innovation. Now we're just lazy with a computer. It's just not, it's not that it can't look good. It just takes away from the, it takes away from that genius spark in my mind when you could just invent a software.
Well, not just that, like, but in this film, it took a lot of work just to figure out how to do this practically. I mean,
right. And craftsmen. It takes craftsmen to build these things.
And not just, well, in this case, a lot of painters, because the same, you know, basically every time you see a floor, it's the same floor. They just repainted it.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Because
there's five different colored, you know, floors.
You have to have skilled people. And so I give it credit for that regard. The last part I wanted, last fun fact before I do my 1 minute plot. 1 minute. The one patient, Peter Jackson, who would later go on to make Lord of the Rings or not, he apparently has an ulcer. And one of his problems is that he was trying to fill it by drinking what was called the squeeze. The squeeze is it's known as Sterno, which is a can that you light on fire for heating. It's like that cook fire you see when people are catering and they have the Bunsen burner underneath the tubs.
Yep.
That's Sterno. And so you take that canned heat, which is a gelled fuel made of ethanol and methanol. And what you would do is, they started doing this in the Depression. It's poisonous to drink, but it became popular during Prohibition. You would take the ethanol, you'd put it in cheesecloth or a sock, produce and squeeze it to produce liquid alcohol. So you would squeeze the alcohol out and then mix it with fruit juice or something else. And that's why it was called squeeze. Now, if you're asking me, wait a minute, this was filmed in the 70s, or let's just say it took place in the 60s, 69. Why would you still be using that when alcohol is readily available? Good question. I guess old habits die hard. I don't know.
Apparently he got used to the taste. I don't know.
Exactly. It's like, why? I mean, we're not going to endorse doing that, but I at least get it. If you're that hard up for alcohol during Prohibition, you'll do whatever.
Sci-Fi Melody's legal department does not endorse squeeze.
Sci-Fi Melody does not endorse that you or anyone should drink squeeze.
No, but
we prefer the purple drink. No.
after alcohol was legalized again, you'd think you'd be like, oh, well, forget that stuff. I'm just going to go buy my bottle of liquor like normal.
Yeah, except you got to remember, even today, you got people who grew up on, you know, the terrible, crappy beer, and they still drink the terrible, crappy beer. That's because they got used to it.
What's wrong with Natty Light and Pabst?
That's right. Oh, and also you get kids who are trying to separate the alcohol from hand sanitizer. And boy, does that not work. That is not what they think it is.
Just think about this, too. This guy lived in a town of 68 people in the middle of Nowheresville, New Mexico, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Might not have been a ready supply of liquor at all times. I was more amused by the fact that he looked at the doctor and said, give squeeze to the baby.
Well, because he's from that time, I guess.
Let's give this baby this toxic combination from a Sterno can.
Yeah, I mean, what can I say? So I think, that's enough. I think we can start the the plot real quick. So basically, some guys are going into Piedmont, New Mexico, a town of 60, as Scott mentioned, to pick up a satellite called the Scoop satellite. And they die. They mention that they just see lifeless bodies everywhere that look like they drop mid-stride, and then they die. And then from there, the film takes the perspective of Dr. Stone, who's before a Senate subcommittee. And then he's recounting what happened. And what happened was, essentially, these guys went to pick up the satellite from the Air Force. They died. So Project Wildfire got started. Wildfire was a biological containment facility posited by astronauts in case a virus showed up to contain it. And that's what happened. They believe that the satellite came back with a virus. So a number of doctors were called in. Dr. Hall and another guy went to, I think it was Dr. Stone. They went, Dr. Stone and Dr. Hall went to the town to get the satellite, found out that the local doctor found the satellite and that the virus with inside turned his blood to powder and everyone else died of the same thing, except for an old man and a baby that won't shut up. I mean, that's what it is. So they wind up getting the baby and the guy and going to Wildfire. And over the course of the research, which takes an overly long amount of time, they discover that it was a mutating virus from space that lives in the blood. And the only reason it needs a perfect pH balance. And the old man, Peter Jackson, had a pH balance out of whack because he was drinking. He had an ulcer and he was drinking squeeze.
And he also taking aspirins.
Yeah. So he was out of whack. And the baby just cried so much. Apparently it was, its acid was out of whack. I don't know. So they
hyperventilated, didn't it?
Yeah. Hyperventilated. That was it. So what eventually happens is they discover that the virus starts mutating and starts breaking the plastic seals on everything, like a jet fighter that flew over the town to take pictures. It had got the virus on it. It was airborne and it disintegrated all the guy's plastic equipment and he crashed. And then we had the plastic seals on all the medical equipment started breaking down because the virus mutated. So there was a nuclear bomb set to detonate, and Dr. Stone, I believe it was the unmarried guy. So going with the odd man out theory, he is the most dispassionate and would be able to pull the trigger and detonate the bomb. So that's what he does.
As a man who was recently not married, I take offense to this concept that because I wasn't married or had a child, that I'm the one most likely to be dispassionate enough to not have people to care about in my life to choose to let everything get blown up.
I didn't say it was correct. I just said that was the theory.
I just wanted to get that one out there.
Okay. Well, he goes and tries to start the nuclear bomb anyway, but they discover that, oh no, the Andromeda virus can now take energy and convert it into matter. And oh my God, this nuclear bomb will actually cause it to get bigger and worse. So after going through the station's defenses of lasers, which actually were depicted not all that badly, he manages to stop in last 8 seconds. He stops the virus or stops the detonation. The virus does manage to get out, but it's above the Pacific. So they just seed clouds and let it get rained down into the Pacific and the salt water kills it, or so they think. The end. Now, in the book is a little bit different in that at the end of the virus gets out. What happens is Wildfire Complex, the seal is broken, and Andromeda is suspected to have mutated into a benign form and migrated into the upper atmosphere. And then you find out later, the book ends with a spacecraft that was incinerated during atmospheric reentry because the heat shield was eaten up, presumably by Andromeda. So movie ends with, okay, we got it, thank God. Hopefully it doesn't come back. And the book ends with, I think the virus is out there. It's just benign and could mutate. So yeah, it's a space virus.
Yeah, does the movie end with the virus being contained, though? Because the computer screen goes nuts and flashes 601.
That's true. It does at the end. Over 601 is a code that means too much data coming in. So it does, I guess, just gives you that idea.
Well, I guess also, it's this is technically not a virus either.
That's true. Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. We call it a virus for lack of our own term. But yeah, basically, it's another organism. So,
hey, but it has rage.
Yeah,
I just want to thank you because after you did your in your summary, I heard long jacket and then cake's been playing in my head ever since then.
Yeah, I'm sorry to do that to you.
So it's okay. I kind of like cake.
Okay. So, it has all the features with DNA in it, and viruses are DNA wrapped in a protein, but it's also missing. It was missing something from DNA. I forget what now.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't exactly a virus. That's true.
It's a alien organism, crystalline organism.
Yeah, there it is. That's it. So, yeah, you're right, Scott. I guess it ends with I guess it's still around. And so
it's a big, is it? It was the, it was the Inception spinning top before the spinning top.
Yeah, but this one, it's different because Inception was just an overcomplicated mess to begin with. Whereas this one was a clear story of, okay, we think we contained it.
Right. And this also has a couple of issues that somehow this organism transfers energy into matter at like 100%.
Yeah.
Insane and impossible. It's theoretical, but good luck actually doing it. But then also apparently this virus just transfers in one massive blob through the air together in one spot, and none of it gets gusted, you know, or moves anywhere else. Thankfully,
that's convenient.
Yeah. So conveniently it goes over the ocean and we're all saved because it's all in one spot.
Why didn't we think about doing this with COVID?
I don't know.
Because it's not an outer space virus thing. It's not an outer space organism. That's why it's not an alien.
You know,
the Gulf Stream doesn't work that way and goes the other direction.
All these scientists had to do was ask me. I have a solution.
That's a nitpick.
We simply bomb the entire country with a combination of bleach and Lysol. It'll saturate everything. Problem solved.
Okay. Well, that...
And we're going to be sending out the army with backpacks full of bleach and Lysol to get to every home and every building and spray the interior down.
As long as they make it taste like strawberry, I guess that's okay.
All citizens are mandated to take a bleach bath 3 days a week in their bathtub, and it's solved.
That sounds like it'll dry out the skin.
Don't ask. It's Scott's crazy dreams.
It might actually work.
Well, we don't have to do that now.
If it doesn't work, everyone will have to ingest 15 cc's of bleach Lysol mix every week.
As long as it tastes like strawberry.
Sci-Fi Melody does not recommend that anybody ingests bleach.
Even if it tastes like strawberry.
And even if the bleach will prevent you from getting the COVID by causing death.
Sci-Fi's legal department would like these two commentators to stop before we get sued.
I am done. So I think we covered all the essentials here. So let's just do what we do and rip and pick this thing.
I got a great rip.
Go for it.
The Gulf Stream goes the other direction.
Whoopsie.
It would not be blown out to the Pacific Ocean. It would be blown towards the East Coast.
Yeah, that's quite the good point, because they are in New Mexico and the jet stream. Yeah, no, that wouldn't, unless they just waited till it got to the Pacific for some reason.
Yeah, by going all the way around the world and killing everything.
You guys are forgetting something. They simply called Superman and had him fly around the Earth fast enough until it started rotating backwards for a bit, thus reversing the jet stream.
This makes sense. Okay, I get it now.
I forgot about that part of the movie.
Whoops.
It happened off screen. They didn't have the budget. Just like the plane crash.
Yeah, the Richard Donner got the money for that part. So, okay, I get that. I get that. I like the depiction of the lasers in this at the end, the station's defenses. I mean, of course, it was cheesy that, of course, the Doctor had to race against time against station defenses. But notice that the lasers are depicted. They're not like pew, pew. It just, you hear the hum from the apparatus. You see a quick flash of light and then burn. It's like, yeah, that's what would happen.
Yeah, they're also just completely useless, though, because, I mean, unless it was going to shoot the lab rat, I think even the monkey could have survived that hit. I mean, it gave him a nice cigarette burn on his cheek. And then...
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right about that, because as it was searing him, I was thinking the same thing. Why wouldn't you just use a bullet? I mean, it's not like you're not in Atmo.
Yeah. Well, here's a... you guys decide if this is a rip or a pick. The scene where they show the monkey dying from the virus.
I didn't like that. Not that it was done tastelessly. I'm not going to... feel bad for the poor guy. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you how it was done.
Oh, please. That sounds interesting, actually.
So underneath... Yeah. Underneath the cage... They put a candle that burned, what was it? I think carbon monoxide or something.
What?
So they basically filled up that cage with not air.
And it collapsed.
Oxygen. And then they put the monkey in there.
Now, wait a second. The first thing in this, in the credits says that the scenes with all the animals were filmed in front of the Humane Society and none were harmed.
Let me finish.
Oh my gosh.
So they only did this scene once. Okay. They only shot this scene once. The monkey passed out, and then a veterinarian ran over from off, scene with a mask with oxygen for the monkey. And yes, they shot it in front of they had an actual person from the humanity. Watching them film.
The Humane Society was much more lax back in those days, I can tell. Because also, that reminds me, to a worse degree, of the movie Beastmaster, where they painted a tiger in black paint. And the poor thing died after it licked all the paint off of it.
Yeah, well,
this paint going to hurt the tiger? I don't know. Just smear it on.
Well, in this case, the monkey survived and had no ill effects. It just basically passed out from lack of oxygen.
Okay. Well, I'm going to call it
optional.
I'm going to call it a rip, because I'm going to be honest. I understand showing us the animals dying, but the scenes where the two monkeys died were just, I mean, it's disturbing. It was like a punch to the stomach. It didn't need to be that visceral to show me the cute little monkey, like, trying to get out of the cage, desperately trying to get out of that cage.
Yeah.
In every way, really, fighting for its life. I mean, if you were going for a powerful moment, yeah. And then you got the scientist back there. All right, let's get it to autopsy. We killed it. Let's look at it now.
Well, you know what? That's not entirely unbelievable.
It's a not. It's scientist, not. But
so...
Well, I mean, I think it's a rip and a pick, because I'm like, it's terrible, but it's also like realistic and it shows it. It's not shying away from it.
Yeah. You asked. I just, for the way it was, something I would have rather not seen in the movie. And I'm also going to say I didn't need to see still pics of dead kids. Hollywood doesn't do that these days. And I was viscerally shocked, because I'm so not used to seeing Hollywood show kids dead.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that was back in the 70s. So, I got a pick and a rip I'll throw out there. One has to do, the pick would be, I really thought the sets were neat. Because you have the way the suits operate, like where Peter Jackson and the baby are. And to get in there, they have to like open a door and hop into the suit. And it's a tunnel that goes out. I thought that was neat. I think they did a really great job with the sets. It was, if I had been living in the early 70s or late 60s, I would have thought that was the future. Absolutely. I couldn't have imagined anything more high tech than that. A pick, on the other hand, though, is the extra long decontamination process, where not only does it take forever to go through it, but they give you the conference room discussion of all the levels they're going to be going through. And it really is like sitting through a work meeting. It's like, okay, it's like, I get it. This is being written by a doctor who this is what they'd be going through.
Well, I was about to say, I have problems with the decontamination because, I mean, at a certain point you go, that is insane and that is going too far. And at a certain point you go, you're no longer eating.
Yeah, well, exactly. And my favorite part is, and this was a pick because I thought it was hilarious, when they put those glittery helmets on and looked like the Shockmaster from WCW.
I looked at Sarah and I said, hey, look, it's silver painted bubble wrap.
I thought it was the Shockmaster. And then they had the white powder on them. It's like, what is this? And I just kept going. I kept wanting Sid Justice to come in and be like, I don't care who you are.
Right. And I mean, because again, we have decontamination ways. You go through, you can decontaminate, you get rid of clothes, fresh clothes, all that. We have ways. But at a certain point, you go, oh, you're burning off your layer of skin now. I'm sorry, what?
Why?
And now you're exposing yourself to anything.
In addition to wanting something for my face, I want something for my nether regions. It's going to be very painful to take a poop anytime in the next few days.
Well, you probably won't need to poop anymore because now all your sustenance is coming through a pill. So
that's the other thing. Like, they fired radiation at them. This is complete. And if you were still thinking of having a child, you're not now.
Yeah. Hey, unmarried guy.
Whoops.
Sorry.
You are sterile.
Good thing you're gonna die later or not.
By the way, did anyone save? Oh, wait, this is before we thought of saving sperm. You're screwed.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand the process and the idea behind it, but I'm like, it is way too extreme and way too far that to a certain degree you go, okay, at this point, just let the virus go, because if this is what you have to do to get to the virus, no thanks.
Yeah, and I love just the Shockmaster helmet. I'm still never going to get that. It's like, wait, that is really, wow. I am so confused right now. Why is this?
There was no budget left.
Apparently. But the fact that they dragged it out, for as long as that stuff was, that was a scene you could have just been like, you know, we really don't need this part.
Well, there was also all that time, you know, they were supposed to be spending in between layers. So it's like, while this virus is going and spreading and killing everyone, take your time between layers and take time to talk and have a conference while you...
Yeah.
Before the next decontamination. By the way, did you feel like your skin needs to get peeled off? Because that's layer 6.
Yeah.
Which is going to de-skin you.
And when we're all done, by the way, you need to go to sleep. No urgency or anything. Just take a nap.
Also, I'm sure it's going to be real, real comfortable inside that suit that's not cloth, that's made out of paper, sleeping on that prison cot after you've had the entirety of the outer layer of your skin burned off.
Yeah.
Well, not just that, but then think of it this way. They've been burnt. They've been crystallized. They're no longer eating. I'm sorry. I need coffee to get up in the morning. You're no longer getting caffeine intake either?
Nope.
After all this pain, excruciating pain and terribleness, and now not getting coffee or eating, so I'm going to have stomach pains. You're supposed to now do research. Good luck, guys.
Here's the other thing. Like, we know this a lot. You know what? There's a reason that we're not all taking vitamins only to live. Okay? Because you still need carbs to burn off to get energy. And an 8-ounce glass of something that looks like urine and some pills aren't going to burn off all those carbohydrates for you to have the energy to function.
not just that, but your internals would start collapsing. Your small and large, and your stomach would literally start collapsing if you don't put enough in it.
Right. Yeah. Your body's going to look for calories. Nutrients is one thing, but you still need caloric intake to function.
Yeah. These doctors, I'm sorry, they're going to die trying to figure this thing out because they're probably not going to figure it out because they're not going to have enough energy to do the research.
Here's my biggest rip. This movie thinks it's progressive. And maybe from the lens of 1971, it's progressive. But I kind of cringed at the treatment of Dr. Leavitt. She is an equal to, I don't remember his name, male scientist that she's working with.
Dr. Hall?
Dr. Hall. And of course, because Dr. Hall is the man, he's going to be giving orders to her like he is in charge and her superior, and she's going to follow them. Even after she's proven right, because she is the female scientist, she's still going to have to follow the orders of the male scientist because, well, we can't have this female scientist who is his equal in intelligence holding her own ground here. She's going to give way, yield, and follow his commands because, yeah, it's the 70s, but you know what? We're progressive because women can be scientists, too, and take orders from men.
Wasn't he placed in charge? I thought he was placed in charge.
He was in charge.
He was in charge of it.
He was in charge of wildfire.
They placed him in charge of it.
I thought Dr. Jones was in charge of wildfire. Jeremy.
Dr. Hall's the one that came up with the idea.
Okay, that takes my entire rip away. I thought they were equal and but still, I just didn't.
They are in so much as that.
I get what you're saying, Scott. I do. I absolutely get it. But I definitely think they were, especially if you're looking at it through the lens of the time, extremely progressive. I mean, again, for the time period, it's like, oh, a female doctor and a leading female doctor.
Yeah.
She is. Let's see. They brought four of their best scientists in to research this. One of them is a female.
For the time period, this was a progressive film. And it kind of just goes to show where the status of women were in 1971, though, to look at it as saying this was considered a progressive treatment.
Well, and you know, since this is a film written by... Well, never mind. My point's erroneous. Speaking of Dr. Ruth there, I do have a question about her. Can anyone explain to me the necessity of having her be epileptic? It is in the book as well, but I don't get the point of it.
Well, they actually, I was going to say that's one of my picks. When she's arriving, she looks away from, she looks away from the flashing red light and passes it off as saying, it reminds me of my time in a bordello. But they set that up because the flashing red light, when it shows that there's a cure, or not a cure, but a solution that'll stop the growth, she doesn't see it because the flashing red light sends her into an epileptic state.
Okay.
So she misses the cure.
I remember that, but I just was trying to figure out, is there a purpose for her having epilepsy and having a...
I think that was it.
That's the purpose.
Okay. All right.
She looks away from the flashing and misses the cure.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. That I get. Because she is in the book as well.
It's very subtle. Not as subtle as the Chekhov's red key that's given in the first... Can we talk about the stupidity of this defense system?
Go ahead.
If there's a contamination, we're going to self-destruct the whole facility by atomic warhead.
Sure.
We've decided that one person and only one person will have the red key that can save everyone from destruction. There are three terminals on each level that person can get to. But in the event of a containment leak, everything gets isolated into their own little sections, some of which do not have a terminal to shut down the atomic warhead. So in the event of a false positive with the system, you have to hope that the only guy with the red deactivation key doesn't get isolated in a section of the station to where he can't get to things to shut it down.
Yep. It's a fatal flaw.
It's an idiotic defense system that's set up as a contrivance for the only scene of drama and action we get in the entire film, which Dr. Overly Dramatic plays up the intense amount of shock he got from that cigarette burn on his cheek.
Well, it did make a hole in his cheek, okay?
Yeah, well, listen, it should never put you in that much shock.
Although it begs the question, if it did that much, how come it didn't keep going? Because that's what a laser does.
Well, also, let's go back to how apparently a nuke will not stop this thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Because it just converts matter or energy into matter.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't think anything can convert that much energy that quickly, especially over heat energy, when we're talking about something that gets hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yeah, a fraction of a second. This is where the fiction comes in the science fiction big time.
Yes, there is a reason why we have thermonuclear warheads as possible uses for stopping, zombies and stuff. We always think of it that way because they work really well at doing things and vaporizing everything.
Yeah, you would think like, okay, so that means every sun out there is holding the Andromeda virus. Like, if the Andromeda virus wanted to grow, oh, look, a star. Awesome.
Yeah, not just that, but then it could also have radiation energy that it would be absorbing, thermal energy.
Yep.
UV. It would be getting all sorts of energy from a star. It would love it. I don't know why it wouldn't go towards every single star.
Maybe
the gravity finally gets to it when it gets crushed in the center of it, maybe.
But I... Even if, now maybe I'm wrong, I'm not a physicist, so I could be wrong, or a chemist, but even if it could convert the energy of an atomic blast into matter to replicate itself, essentially, the efficiency of that and how quickly it would have to convert it before being obliterated by it seems almost impossible because it would have to be almost instantaneous with almost zero loss of time and immediate replication.
Well, not just that, but the thing being, to convert matter into energy and energy into matter it's E equals MC squared. For one, you're going to get way more energy than you will matter out of anything, and it takes way more to do the other thing. So you're not going to get that much matter out of it, but...
Yeah, that's the other thing. Wouldn't the whole Earth if you're going to convert that energy back into matter, I mean, isn't that an insane amount of matter that's pretty much...
That would consume the Earth, wouldn't it?
Times the speed of light squared?
It's one of those formulas that when you start doing the math, it hurts. But the other thing I was going off of
instantaneously create that much?
Right. Well, here's the other issue. A nuclear warhead, and I don't remember in the 60s or the 70s what the nuclear warheads, their efficiency were up to, but at the current modern day military, the current arsenal is about 40% efficient, which means, and for thermonuclear warheads, that is efficient. That means about 40% of that uranium is turned into pure energy and is released. That's only 40% though. And somehow this virus is converting matter energy into matter at that kind of efficiency rating? What? That's insane.
I think I'm also forgetting one of my other basic laws of physics, but isn't it true that matter can't be really created or destroyed, just transformed into a different...
That's substance. What E equals MC squared is. Energy equals mass times light squared. What happens?
So you shouldn't be able to spontaneously create that much matter, right?
Well, you can, theoretically. We've never been able to really do that because, again, it takes so much more energy. It takes so much energy to create matter. It's a lot easier to do a formula the other way around. Like, that's nukes, basically, is you take matter and you convert it into energy. And again, we only convert about 40% of that matter into energy. But, you'd have to think, take a nuclear warhead and multiply that thing by a whole bunch to get any matter. That's how much energy you would need to make get matter out of it because of the formula. So you would need insane amount of energy to get matter. It's really easy to go the other way. And when I say easy, I shouldn't say easy, but easier.
That makes for a very powerful enemy that could, that is the biggest threat to humanity ever.
Yes, because if it literally takes any energy, which again, that's the other thing that's insane. It can take nuclear energy, any energy, and convert it. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I don't know how this thing isn't like engulfing half of the universe, but okay.
Well, because it has the most ridiculous Achilles heel weakness of anything, in that it can only live in this very narrow range of acidity.
Yeah, I guess it goes dominant. It's like, and apparently, again, this is the weird thing again, how space and science fiction always works. Earth apparently is just the right pH balance. That it's just right and it will survive. I'm sorry, what? That's a very nice feature of this thing. That's just the right pH balance on Earth. But okay, sure. Nice convenience there. So apparently anywhere else in the universe, it won't survive. Lucky? Yeah. It's a contrivance for sure.
So, okay, are there any other final rips and picks? Because I think there's not too much to say about this film, honestly.
I mean, we pretty much covered that it's slow, but informative. It's an old, okay, here's one. This is an older film. So it's both a rip and a pick. And I'm because it's an older film, it's shot differently, it looks different, the effects are worse, but it also has a nostalgic feature to it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
So you have to go into it knowing that it's there. It's not like a modern day fast action film.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Definitely. So if you walk in there knowing it's a, you know, an old film, you know what you're getting. It has a just.
Sure. And you have to be willing to sit patiently through a film that has really almost nothing in the way of action.
Yes.
The scenes that are supposed to be action packed are not action packed.
And even then, this also does fall into pretty much the same issue that all of these films we've reviewed have had, the viruses and stuff. Who is the bad guy? A virus,
which I mean, it works, but
I mean, it's still the same problem that all of these have, which is the virus is the bad guy. You don't exactly have your antagonist.
Yeah.
So
I like films of this style, though. I miss seeing more films like this where it's
suspense,
but also where you don't get all the information immediately. You figure out what's going on at the same rate that the characters in the film do. With very rare exceptions, we did figure out early that there is a solution that will stop the growth. But with very rare exceptions, you're piecing it together at the same rate that your main characters are. I also like the fact that this isn't a story that's told on action, drama, and beating a protagonist or an antagonist to death. It isn't based on ramping and building up and solving a conclusion or solving a dilemma with force. There's a plot. There's a escalation of that. The movie reaches a climax. It has a resolution, but it does it without relying on jump cuts, action, and miracle solutions. There is just some classic storytelling to this. And I miss films like this.
Yeah. You're right, because there is no suddenly we found the cure because.
Yeah. It maybe we didn't win.
Right. So it does. I think we've ripped it and also picked this thing to death.
I think we have too. I think we can rate it. How much, let's say That's what they rated this. This survives in. What pH would we give this?
Interesting.
Who wants to kick us off?
I'll do it this time. I'll give it a 6 because 5 or 6 because it's a good concept and they really did take it seriously. But unfortunately, it's really long, slow plotting and boring in a lot of parts. So you got to be ready to be patient in the long haul. So 6, 5 or 6.
Okay. Slightly acidic. I am going to go. I think I will give it on a pH scale 10, which goes to like a 6 or 7. Because the pH scale goes from 0 to 14. But this film is missed because we really don't see this filmmaking anymore or this storytelling anymore. And yes, it's slow. And most of the time, I don't like slow films. I will be honest. And if you've heard my reviews on a lot of things, I don't like slow films. And I'm like, there's no action. It sucks.
And this is slow.
This is slow. But the story they're telling, I think, works so much better being slow.
Yeah.
I don't think this story works if it's cut. And it's fast paced and it moves quickly and boom, bang, bang. No.
Sexy scientists.
Right. This is a slow film. They're working on a virus. And this virus is going to kill everyone. And it's a space virus and it's not even a virus, you know. So I think it works well. So I can't say it's a 10 or a 9 even or even an 8. It's not one of the best films ever. But it is a good film, and I think it is a excellent sci-fi viral film for sure. I want to give it, I'm settling on a 7.
Okay.
I'm going to give it an 8. I think it's a tightly focused story that knows what it wants to tell. It wants to fill you in on the dangers of a government that is attempting potentially to weaponize biological threats. You know, because they have that aspect of it in there. It also kind of hints at the dangers that could be awaiting us as we move into space exploration, as we come into contact with potentially things that are not of this world. But it also just... it presents a very simple problem, or not simple, but a very focused problem. We've got a virus. If this virus breaks containment, all of humanity could die. We have to find a cure, and it lets you watch them solve the puzzle, and there's a good human interaction, and the actors and actresses, for the most part, do a wonderful job of carrying a script that is very dialogue-based. And from a director's standpoint, they never tried to show you more than they were capable of and reach too far with an effect. And I think ultimately, even though this is a slow film, for knowing the type of film that you had, this was a well-paced film. And it never really got into tangents. It stayed focused on the story that it was trying to tell. It was compelling. It was interesting. And maybe I'm just giving it points because I miss this type of storytelling. But at the same point in time, I think it's harder to make this type of film than it is to make something that Michael Bay does or a Bad Robot film. It's a lot harder to be able to bring this to the screen and tell something of substance when you can't just take a shortcut to look at the awesome fighting robots slugging it out in the street, destroying buildings and blowing stuff up. Look at these effects to cover the fact that I don't have much hair on the page. So I'll give it an 8. I think it was enjoyable and I wouldn't mind seeing movies told in this style come back, But in today's now, me, I don't have any time generation. I don't know if we're going to get that.
Scott, you just moved mine up to a 7 by saying it's pointing out how Bad Robot or Michael Bay couldn't do it. That in and of itself gave it a point. So congratulations, film.
Well, we just reviewed a good film.
I'd say so. I'd say it was worth it's worth our time. And what about you, Sickies? If you have ever seen this, what do you think? Was it worth your time? And if you haven't seen it, do you think you're going to give it a shot? You can leave us comments at
www.notarealwebsite covered in a white flaky paste from having your skin burnt. No. RavingLunaticMedia.com, RavingLunaticMedia.com, RavingLunaticMedia.com. Rage Master, what's left for them to do?
Stay sick, sickies.
And get a xenon-like tanning booth. No, don't.
So what I told you was true. From
sci-fi malady
point of view.